The Breakdown with Bethany is a mom.com podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of The Breakdown with Bethany. I'm Bethany Bronsilva, and today my guest is Jerry Halliwell Horner. And I'm going to actually start this podcast a little bit differently than the rest by just sharing some things with you all. I've been in a little bit of a funk lately. I don't know what it is. I think it's just motherhood, work, just feeling run down. And sometimes when we get to meet someone who's been so impactful in our lives, it can kind of help you take a minute, step outside of yourself and reflect on where you're at and what you're doing. And I got to do that today with Jerry Halliwell Horner. And she's the author of this incredible book, Rosie Frost and the Falcon Queen. And I came into this interview less prepared than other interviews. And I feel like I wanted to share that. It feels like it's almost something I want to kind of like cop to, right? This is an incredible book. I haven't read the whole thing. And she asked me if I had, and I've only gotten through the first couple of chapters. And I felt kind of like I disappointed her. And she is someone that has really like been there for me in my darkest moments, although I've never met her before. I mean, when I think about the Spice Girls' impact on my life, it really is so much more than like a pop group, right? It's more than like a musical, like a phenom, whatever you call it. Their music to this day is something that I turn it on when I need to be pumped up, pepped up. I light up at the sight of any sort of Spice Girls reference. And so I kind of put a lot of pressure on myself with this interview. And I felt like I saved it. But I felt bad about not reading the whole book. Jerry Halliwell Horner is... To say she's smart is like a gross understatement. She's incredibly, incredibly intelligent, well-spoken woman. And I really, after, you know, speaking with her, I feel inspired, empowered, and sort of ready to take on like this crappy feeling that I've been, you know, sort of struggling with. So that really is the beauty of what she represents, what she represents to me, what she represents to so many women. So I really hope that you'll listen to this conversation, listen to the words that she says about the inspiration for her writing this book. It's the first in a series. She is an author. She's written many children's books in the past, but this book is really special. And we dive into her process. We dive into the inspiration. We dive into motherhood and creativity. And she left me with some really, really kind words. And you know, it's a different way of, you know, introing this podcast, but I felt like I owed it to her, owed it to everything that she's done for me, to just give her a little bit more of a moment. And actually, I'm going to read the first line of chapter one in Rosie Frost and the Falcon Queen. Why did being left out hurt so much? Rosie Frost had always felt like she didn't belong. All her 13 years, it had been that way, and she didn't know why. So for anyone who might be feeling like they don't belong, even if you're, you know, pushing 40 like I am, you're having a moment where you're not sure quite where you fit in this crazy world. You know, I hope you'll read this book and then listen to Jerry Halliwell Horner's words in this episode. Thank you so much. I have the book, and I saw you were out last night with some other people I admire, like Alana Wiles and Serena Kerrigan. So I'm glad you're enjoying the city in spite of this dreadful, dreadful weather.
You know what? This city is amazing.
It
just put me off about a bit of weather. Look, I'm British, so it's fine.
Well
done, you. I was looking at your site, so you know all that you've done. Very nice.
Oh. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And we're going to get into the book. We're going to get into it all, but I would really be like remiss if I didn't say like what an incredible impact you've had on me. I don't know. Do you ever get tired of hearing that? I mean,
Think it's a nice thing, isn't it?
But
otherwise, what are we doing it for? Do you know what I mean? That's lovely that he did. Where are you originally from here?
Yeah, I'm from New York City. I was born and raised in New York City, and I sort of came up, in Midtown. I grew up in Midtown Manhattan, and it, you know, I really came up in the era of the Spice Girls. It was so impactful to me and my friends, and even all these years later, it's something that we really just sort of, it's like a bonding thing. And so given, you know, when I was presented with the opportunity to speak to you, I really just felt like I wanted to share that because—
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
That's so nice. It's like, why are you doing your podcast? Obviously, because obviously you're a mother and then you suddenly embrace that and all that. I get it. But you know, you're being of service. At the same time, it's, oh, we all want to be successful, blah, blah, blah. But you're being of service. So isn't that wonderful that, do you know what I mean? What you do helps other people or connects. And that, so it's the same, I think, in anything that we do. So it's lovely.
Oh, thank you. Oh my gosh, it means so much to hear you say that. But I do want to get into this book because, oh my goodness, this seems to me like, we would know that writing a book is such an undertaking, but this book—
You've written it well, haven't you?
I did, but it was nothing like this. I mean, even just like the sheer, like, this is good. This is just, it's so vast, so, and the story, like, can you tell us a little bit? I want to jump into the story.
Did you manage to read it? Have you had time? Because I won't feel like offended because I know you're mummy. So
no, I have started. I have not finished it, but I'm really captivated.
Where did you get to? Go on.
Well, just the story of her being an orphan. And then I was reading also the Scary Mommy article about all the sort of like the woven, like underneath all the sort of messages that are woven into it. And I think you do that so well. But what made you decide to write a book like this?
Well, I've written stories before, but for younger, and I always loved writing. I think that we all want to find power in our lives, and that I think the one place that you can take ownership or agency in your own life is writing. And so I've always loved, I studied English literature before I went into music, and so I always felt, you know, I'm no Mariah Carey. I like the writing bit of songwriting more, you know, that creative bit. And I always look, you've spoken about whether it's gives the audience some sort of, fills them up and connects. Yes. Oh, it's empty and pointless. And so I kept on thinking, well, I've done this because you've got two daughters.
I have two boys.
Okay, that's another conversation. Well, let's talk about that too. But and how old are they?
They're 8 and 11.
Okay, that's interesting. I've got a son as well. But so I wrote younger for younger audience. And I thought, oh, shall I? I always think, I had this idea, the world needs a new hero, you know, that we all can identify with. That's not alpha, you know, that doesn't have all the answers, that's real. And so I thought maybe vulnerability is the new superpower. And so I questioned whether I just aged what I'd done up. And then I spoke to Harry Potter's agent and he said, no, because he was my agent at the time. And he said, start again. So, which I did. And I developed, this was 9 years ago. I started again and started develop. And the characters remain the same. And, you know, I think being a writer is a blessing and a curse because I could not stop. But I was learning as I went to do that sort of a big novel because you have to sort of mechanics of what works there and what works here. I found it really hard. But what drove me on was that sort of passion to empower, adventure, character. When you read it, I really hope that you get something, as well as being entertained, and I hope it makes you laugh and warm your heart, but also I want you to come out of it going, yeah.
It seems like you managed to do that really well. And I also want to talk about, I mean, the main character, Rosie Frost, she does have a bit of a musical side. Was that, yeah, obviously that was intentional, but can we talk about that a little bit?
I mean, there's all different mediums, isn't there, that, you know, that we can use to communicate. And so part of the story, you know, she has this connection with her mother that's not alive anymore, that they used to write together. It was just something they did. And through a series of challenges, and this is quite, I would say, quite extreme
this story that, you know, your sons are going to like it. They're characters that you can see, but you can be it. So, you know, the boys are strong, but the boys cry, the boy cries, the girls save the boys. And there are three challenges that she has to enter when she gets to this school. She does it for selfish reasons at first, and it's a bit like Squid Game, mm-hmm. but it's all in honor, the DNA of it is the present, it's set in the present, but it's all in the honor of Anne Boleyn, Tudor times, right? So they're quite extreme, but Anne Boleyn believed in like creativity, reform. And so the challenge number two, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it is about expression of change. You know, you think, oh, that's nice. And so you see her do that. She enters this competition and it looks all innocent, but it's not. Something, like if you don't get through, something really bad happens. It's quite interesting. But anyway, you just see Rosie, she sort of uses that sort of innocence and that age where you're working things out. And she sort of writes and sings a little bit. It just touches on it. But there's music in the actual book. You just have to scan the code and you get two songs.
That's really quite a gift for us. But I also
thought, you know what? You've waited this long. And I'm always saying, oh, some people said, oh, you know, are you ever going to do music? And I've always done music. So I thought, just give it to you. You know, and it helps sort of narrate the story. One is really like crunchy, it's got a rap in it, it's fun. And the other one is like something that you might connect to. It's called A Beautiful Life. And it's about, you know, all the things that you've been through in your life, Bethany, where you just thought, God, what am I doing? You know, this is difficult. But then the end of it, you're like, you know what? I made it. And I found out what I'm made of and who my friends are. And I feel filled with gratitude, faith. So it's kind of that. Basically,
that's really, really fantastic. And I'm also wondering, I mean, obviously this story, the characters are so strong. They really do kind of, they're universal, but there is something about this young adult genre that I think is really captivating right now. I mentioned my son is 11. He's art, you know, that's sort of, it's really such a pivotal time in a young person's life. They're sort of entering, you know, young adulthood, teenhood. Was this, what was the thought process behind writing, you know, for this audience in particular, although, you know, anyone can read it, of course.
Can read it. My husband read it and he doesn't read books. Right? He does, but only occasionally, maybe once on holiday. And he said, okay, I'll read it when it's published, and he did. And he went, but the first thing, have you got a husband or a partner?
I do have a husband and he doesn't read either.
Okay, there you go. So anyone will identify with this. Do you know what he said? He went, oh, the first thing he said was, oh, it's a, better than I thought it was going to be, right?
Thanks, hon. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Then he said, and then he was carrying on reading it, and he goes, do you know what? I couldn't put it down. I forgot that you'd written it, and I just wanted to know what had happened next. I was like, okay, my work is done. But okay, so that's great. I want everyone to read it. That's my hope, right? Having said that, it is, you know, the characters are at that vulnerable age where they're working things out. But I think that age is no man's land. You don't belong at the teacup ride in Disney and you're not at the big wheel. You're sort of like, I'm not allowed into a bar, but you sort of like, what? I don't want to hang out with. So you're sort of working things out and you haven't fallen down so many times. But yeah, so there's a youthful bravado there, which is quite useful. But I think it's a pivotal age.
It is. And I'm kind of like really feel like I'm living through it again, right? With my son. It is, you forget the emotions, the sort of like navigating new feelings, new everything. I think that's also why this genre and while this book, I'm sure will be a massive hit.
The character, there's two boys in it and it and both of them, then one called Charlie is gorgeous, right? And he's strong and there's a moment that he shows vulnerability, which I think is really important for your sons to see. Do you know what I mean? It's really healthy that boys do cry. That's healthy, but you can still be like macho and get on with it. But can I ask you, right, that I was thinking, because I've got a son and I was thinking, no wonder boys are the way they are, right? Because I'm like, it's like Lion King moment, you know, when they lift up the sun and like Simba go, yes, that's my fault.
Right. I mean, it's wild. And two of them and the age difference is so crazy. It's crazy. I mean, 11 hit us hard, like, being honest, like it hit us. All of a sudden he was my sweet, sweet little boy, and now he stinks and okay. Yeah, grumpy. Oh, it's tough. I still get glimmers of his
cuddliness that they love. Oh, that's
Yeah. But also, you know, obviously that we're a podcast for moms. That's our main audience. And what I find, and also with writing my own book, there's a story in us all, right?
Yeah, of course.
And there's just so, it's sometimes, you know, I'm a writer, I'm an editor. I've done that for over a decade. It was really hard for me to get, you know, pen to paper, you know, that even though, you know, I didn't write it like this, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it was hard to get my story out. And I would love for you to take us through maybe the background, the process of writing a book, to maybe encourage other mothers who have a story. Yeah. What was
I actually started, well, just before I had my first child, that's when I first started writing.
Yeah.
And because I suddenly thought, I don't want to go around the world anymore. I don't want to leave, you know, I don't want to leave my children. And but the good news about writing is you can do it anywhere. But I want to be creative. I don't want to lose that identity. So that's, I sort of started then, just before I had my first child. And then sort of the learning of how to was, oh my God, it's a baptism of fire. And I don't think there is a right or wrong way, but I did lean into other writers to show me how do you do it. And they gave me tips. I mean, certain really basic things is like, leave your phone outside of the room. It is an absolute creative killer because you could get so distracted. So therefore, if you can, I mean, it's hard if you're doing research to turn your Wi-Fi, you know, so you don't get any emails. Like maybe I use a different computer. So it's just, so if I want to do, you know, go on, look at, you know, research, you can do that, but I'm not interrupted with emails because it's killer. That's it. It's over. And then the other thing is when I'm on a deadline, oh no, give myself deadlines.
Okay.
Something. My husband told me that because otherwise we can just coast and coast. So give myself goals and discipline of time. So hit your desk at 9 to 12 and then you're allowed to go and have a cup of tea in the middle of it. Otherwise you feel, you know, and then so if you want, when they're in bed, you can go back. Edit in the morning. I do when my brain is fresh. Editing's really hard. I just prefer the sort of like the fun bit when you can write the rah. What else can I say? And then I read this book called How to Write. It's by Stephen King. And he said, go in a dark room, which I did. So there's no sort of any distraction, but it's quite intense. And then the other thing that was like an absolute game changer, and I was really struggling. And it really proves how bad do you want, how much do you believe in your characters? You know, because there were times when, like, someone told me, an agent said to me, oh, I think you should get rid of Charlie. And I was like, no way. I was like, I love him. Or there was, it wasn't getting positive at the beginning, right? This was like many, many years ago. And then I met this other writer. He's called William Boyd. And this is like the Beethoven of, you know, and I gave him my manuscript going, oh, can you just look at it? I didn't realize who he was at first. It was like giving Humpty Dumpty to Beethoven, right? And I said, I'm really struggling. And he said, rewrite the whole thing, the same story, but rewrite it in the third person rather than the first, and write it in the past tense rather than the present tense, because you back yourself into a corner. So it's something really simple, but it was just, you know, laborious. You've got to go in, and it taught me how bad do I want it. Just those sort of lessons. And the other thing he taught, and it was after I'd done it, and he said, and I've applied it to book two, is that he said, write structure first. There's no right way to do it. But if you write structure first, rather than like, I just ambled along on book one. And then I had to go into like with a pair of like surgery scissors trying to fix it. I don't know if any of this makes sense, but it is quite hard.
It is. It's such a process.
I hadn't done it before, but I felt compelled to do it.
I love it. And no, of course, it's an incredibly hard process. And I think, and actually sort of leads me into my next question. You're a creative person. I think we all have that creativity, and some of us need to express it more than others. And you mentioned also that when you're a writer and you wanted to be home with your kids, was there any sort of a return to or rediscovering your creativity after becoming a mom? I also know that you're a stepmom, and sometimes we get lost in the sauce, right, of motherhood, and we forget ourselves. And then it sort of maybe takes a project, the undertaking of this book or music or however you might express yourself, creativity. I know that's something we struggle with a lot as mothers, and if we'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so I think I'm a better mother if I am also, they say on an aeroplane, put your own gas mask on first, right, your oxygen mask on first, right? So I always think if I can look after this first, I'm a better mother anyway. I'm more present, and but there are things and boundaries that it's not easy. What did I do? Okay, to rediscover and reawaken, there's different parts of my life. I did this. It's a course on from this book called The Artist's Way, right? And she's in America, and she gives you a series of it's like coursework to do to sort of take yourself on a date, write out what you'd like your life to look like, and you suddenly start waking up your interests. I did that at one stage. I wrote my first children's series after that. I think it's like carving out time and saying, actually, but it is hard, isn't it? Just saying, I'm just going to do this for me. And sometimes life isn't like that. It's not practical but it's remembering that this is what I try and remind myself. There is going to come a day, right, when our children will leave us, right? We will get dumped.
The biggest heartbreak, right? The
biggest heartbreak. And, that's a healthy, that's healthy. They go off into the, we're just shepherds, aren't we? So I think it's really healthy to have your own, your own identity and have your own interests. If you can, not easy sometimes. I mean, I'm saying something that's idealistic, but to keep it in mind. But, first things first, I want my children to be healthy and happy, because if they're not, I'm not.
They say that if you really truly are doing your job as a parent, your kids will leave. that's the point, right? Like, you want them to leave. I talk, actually in my book, I talk about this thing, like roots and wings. I think it's a Jonas Salk quote. And, we want to give them the roots, like the wings to fly, but like the roots to know they can always come home. So that was...
What quote is it?
Excuse me?
Who said that?
Salk, Jonas Salk. He's a scientist.
I'm going to write it down.
Oh, okay.
Jonas Salk.
All of a sudden, I got really nervous. Now I'm like, let me just do a quick Google search, but I'm pretty sure.
That's all right. Roots with wings.
Yeah, roots. We give our children the roots to fly, but I mean the wings to fly, but the roots to know they can always come home.
Yeah, that's it. They're always sort of like, are you still there? Exactly. The anchor them. I think that's nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Confident to be out in the world. We can only try, but also I think it's being a good... It's quite good to kids copy, I think. Kids copy by example. So if I can, show that, good work ethic and interest, grounded, present, they still might just go whatever. Who knows?
Hopefully they pick up more of your good habits than bad.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not doing it perfectly.
Right. And then so back to Rosie Frost and the Falcon Queen. This is book one, am I right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how's it going? Are the other books finished? Are you working on
I've just finished the first draft of book two. And so I'm just doing, it's really hard when you get all these little notes back. And sometimes it's because then it's all like scribbles all over your page, and you've got to, and they're saying, so it's going okay, I'm pleased with it. But it's like baking a cake, and when you hand it over, it's like it's in the oven, there's almost like your shoulders drop, because then you think, I can't do anything about it. Does that make sense?
And is that how you feel about this first book too? I mean, it's so we're filming this is September 30th. The book comes out on the 3rd, October 3rd. I mean, what is the feeling, the emotional?
It's like your child is leaving home and there's nothing you can do about it. It's like, off you go. You know, I've been with this person. Rosie Frost to me is like a real person. My daughter who's 17 she refers to it as your other child. The other child. I mean, there's two others as well, but the other child, Rosie. And you know, and it's sort of, and you're helping her on her way to present out to the world. But after that, you know, so yeah, I think it's natural to have a little bit of trepidation, but also gratitude. Mm-hmm. You know, I get the opportunity to share this. It's amazing. You know, I'm grateful. This morning I was like, this is such a gift.
That is a great mindset to have. And we're going to wrap up soon, but I know you mentioned your older daughter. What does she think of the book?
They can be our worst critics, can't they? Our children, they don't give a, you know, whatever you've done or whatever. And she waited to read it until it was absolutely completed. Although she helped me on a couple of like jokes. There's a couple of things in there's one of my favorite characters called Ottilie, and she's like a mean girl, but she's so smart. Because at this school, which was built by Queen Elizabeth I in honor of her mother Anne Boleyn, you know, who was, you know, executed by her father, shamed for being smart. And so she builds this school, Queen Elizabeth I builds this school, and it's full of amazing students, polymaths. It's their ideas. So Queen Elizabeth says, their ideas, they will be my heir, right? So 500 years later, you've got these amazing kids there, and all sorts of alumni have been there. Shakespeare, Amelia Earhart, you know, the pilot, yep. All sorts, right? Anyway, so, but this girl, Ottilie, she's kind of like a typical mean girl, but beautiful and gorgeous, but smart as a whip. And there's like a couple of jokes in there that Bluebell did help me with. The one, if you get to read it, there's one about she sort of slips up on Guatemala and what's the avocado? What do you say, Guatemala and? What do you do with that? What's that made out of avocado?
Oh, with guacamole, avocado.
Guacamole, country. She confuses with it. It's kind of really silly, but it's quite funny. And this is a really bright girl. No, but there's just a few sort of humorous, silly. Yeah, but the actual story is very adventurous and quite vicious at times. But and then there's a bit of spiritual chocolate in there.
I love it. Thank you so much for the time. Tell everybody about where they can get the book. I'm sure it's everywhere, but you know, just we have to sign off with like a little bit of.
There you go. Okay, so the book is out, and you can get it in like all regular stores, whether it's Barnes and Nobles or the regular stores in America, across America, or Amazon.
Perfect. And don't forget to scan the QR code for the
two songs. Yeah, if you scan the QR code, you get the two songs. That's lovely.
Oh, thank you so much. This is really so fantastic. And I really just have to say your generosity with sharing everything was really, really fantastic.
My pleasure, Bethany. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. I really, oh, all right. Well, I can't lose now. So
go for it. Why not? Right.
Thank you so much.
Big kiss to you. Bye.
Bye.